Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
What does a local economist think about the recent government shutdown and debt ceiling impasse? What role did the media play? And are we going to go through it all again in the new year? Let's go in depth with Brian Peterson, professor of economics at Central College. So, Brian, we're just coming out of the government shutdown, the confrontation over the debt ceiling. And it looks like we may go into it and be dealing with this again come the turn of the year. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that the outcome that was reached last week was probably the only outcome that truly could have been reached. The biggest issue that we're facing now is a rising deficit, increasing debt, both of which need to be addressed. But at the same time, we can address them while also failing to meet the specific obligations that we may have. There are expenses that have to be paid on an annual basis. We do have to meet interest and principal payments on our long-term and short-term debt. We can't afford to default.
Now, I was speaking with Senator Grassley recently, and he acted like he didn't think that the debt ceiling, not raising it, he didn't think that that was a problem, and he said that there would be we just have to select who we paid and pay the interest, and it shouldn't be a problem. Do you agree with that?
Well, I'm sympathetic to the to that particular perspective, because you know we do want to make sure that when things are tight, we do prioritize, we do all of that. The problem that we run into is that it's a very short-sighted perspective that. We are going to have money continuing to come in with tax revenues. You know, we will be in a position to meet existing interest payments, not principal, just interest payments, but at the expense of what? So say for the sake of argument that we're in a position to meet 75% of existing obligations. Okay, so you take the interest payments off the top of that, what's left? How are you going to prioritize? What's going to get cut? Are we going to automatically stop the fighting in Afghanistan and in Iraq? Are we going to close down military bases? Probably not. So the defense has to be in there. What about education? How much education are we going to cut? How the devil becomes what gets cut, and who is going to be doing the cutting? Your priorities may not be the same as my priorities, which may not be the same as Senator Grassley's priorities. And so it's important that we recognize that we have to cut spending, but we also have to cut spending while meeting every single one of our existing obligations. And the two additional comments to make about that. One is we need to recognize that there are things that are in place by law that have to be met beyond interest payments, right? This is what we refer to as automatic spending. These are the things that come out without any specific requirement of Congress and require an act of Congress to change. So things like unemployment spending, all of those things have to go out. So those things can't be touched. It's the discretionary spending that would specifically require an act of Congress that would need to be cut or not. But guess what? Congress was shut down. The government was shut down, so we're not in a position to start deciding which of these things should get cut and which of these things shouldn't get cut. So it was truly a catch-22. Even if we wanted to meet those obligations and prioritize, we would have to get the government to get together to identify what those priorities were, and they're not getting together to do that. And the second thing to think about is, you know, we hear a lot of people saying, well, the government should operate like a household. I can't go beyond my own the amount of income that I earn, therefore neither should the government. Okay, well, let's take a look at that perspective.
I hear it all the time.
And I think it's a fair statement, right? But you know, we talk about the borrowing as if it's the government's credit card. And that's not exactly it, right? Because if you think about individuals who have a mortgage, may have a car payment or two. They may have children in college for which they have borrowed in order to do that, or they've co-signed loans that may exist on their credit report. They've co-signed loans for their children. we exist in a world where our income may not be sufficient to meet all of our obligations. And you think to yourself, well, that's okay because it's my payment. It's not the total amount of indebtedness. That's an important distinction to keep here, right? You can have the mortgage and the payments on the two cars and helping your child go through college or paying off the braces for your children because you have sufficient income to cover the payments. Now what happens? You lose your job or your job gets cut in half. Somehow your income gets reduced. What are you going to do? You have an obligation to make the interest payments. You have an obligation to make the full mortgage payment, not just interest. You might be able to renegotiate and refinance, but there's an additional expense, and it's not going to happen today. You have the car payments. You're not in a position to renegotiate specifically because it is for principal and interest. So which of those are you going to meet, and which of those are you going to ignore? And then what happens when you start ignoring these other payments? You get those assets taken away from you. And let's suppose that you have enough to cover your mortgage, your car payments, and everything else. What's left? You going to eat or are you going to pay for heat? It got really cold the other night. What's going to happen? So when I said that this was the only outcome that could have happened, I am sincere in that there was no way that we were going to address the fiscal issues we have while in the middle of a shutdown, right? So we set aside the Tea Party conservatives' distaste of Obamacare, and we set aside the Democrats' request that we go back to pre-sequester funding of government. I mean, that was an appropriate measure to take, that we refund the government, for the short term anyway, at the current level of spending. Now we talk. And let's start prioritizing. Let's figure out what needs to go, what needs to stay. But let's think about this now from the perspective of how do we do this going forward, not how do I get through this next week.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Brian Peterson, professor of economics at Central College. Now, how do we know? There's a lot of rhetoric. There's a lot of ideology. How do we know what the facts are? I mean, because I have different people saying, well, this Obama government is just spending like crazy, and it's just this, it's out of control. And then I'll see something that says, well, actually, spending has leveled off under him. But I hear both things. How do we know what is indeed the truth? Is there a truth, or is it just all subject to interpretation by the talking heads we see on television or radio?
There's a famous quote that is usually attributed to Benjamin Disraeli, and that is that there are three kinds of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. The problem that you run into with sifting through everything that you see in a world of 24-hour news is the statistics may not always be the same, right? So we have a level of fiscal spending of $3.6 trillion, and that's going to be deficit-inducing. And that's bad, right? We've reached our debt's threshold of $16.7 trillion. That's bad. But it may not be, right? Again, because you think of you with your car payment and your mortgage payment, you're not worried about the value of the home as part of your income. You're worried about the payment. And so the question then becomes, okay, how large is our indebtedness relative to our level of income? Right? The bankers are willing to give you a mortgage as long as your mortgage payment is 24% to 26% of your gross monthly income, total indebtedness not to exceed 36% to 39%. Right? You have these parameters. You could have a negative net worth when you have your first home, simply because of the size of how much you owe. But the bank's not concerned about that because your mortgage, your monthly payments are sufficiently covered by your income. So we think about total level of spending versus how much indebtedness do we have relative to total indebtedness relative to income. And once you start drawing those comparisons, you draw very different conclusions. Are we at record debt levels? Yes. Are we at record deficit levels? Yes. Are we at record spending levels? Sure. But let's not forget about the fact that we also have inflation, right? So not only are we thinking about record inflation levels, or increasing inflation levels that somehow are part of those record spending levels. So the question then becomes, well, how big is our spending level, say, relative to that by former President Clinton or the first Bush or under President Reagan? Well, now we have to think about cost of living changes that have occurred over that time. And then you draw an entirely different conclusion. So the only way to truly understand what is fact out there is to get really good at data.
But we're not. The American populace isn't.
Well, and part of that is because we're in an era of 24-hour news, we congregate places where they're going to tell us what we want to hear. And that's not a political statement, that there are places that conservatives like to go because they hear about this particular set of data, and there are liberals that go to this site because they like to hear about this particular set of data. And I think one of the things that needs to happen is that we start thinking about identifying these changes if using exactly the same kinds of statistics. So in other words, when the commission starts getting together to think about changes to the budget before January and February, then we get them to say, okay, use the same benchmark data. And use that when you start talking to people. And if you have a consensus on this is the way we're going to express it, then you're able to draw the same conclusions.
But people aren't going to do that. They're going to cherry pick the data that they, what do they call that? Confirmation bias?
It's a confirmation bias.
You pick what you like.
You know, and everyone is guilty of that. Right? There are people that really like Fox News because that's where they go. People like Huffington Post because they're sympathetic. People like the BBC because they think that they're even-handed. Right? We go to the places that are most attractive. Let's go back to this idea of how do we get people to understand. And I tell my students, you have to understand both sides if you're actually going to understand exactly where you sit. So when students write something for me, or if they put together a policy piece, on some levels it's my job, it's my responsibility to play that devil's advocate for the other side, whatever that other side happens to be. If I'm a good enough instructor, I can play the devil's advocate on either side. And what that ends up doing is that either gets them to question, if it was a soft perspective, it gets them to question where they were, or it actually firms up their own perspective. And so I think part of the answer lies with education, which is funded federally and at the state level. If we get students to start understanding exactly how to use numbers, then they're not going to be as, the level of confirmation bias won't be as great, because they'll see both sides, they'll understand both sides, and then make the decision as to exactly which direction they want to go.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Brian Peterson, professor of economics at Central College. But that's that well-informed, thoughtful kind of thing that a lot of people don't have the time. It's easier just to listen to your favorite guy on television or on the radio or wherever, where you let them do the filtering for you. But that's sad in some ways.
Well, and what's interesting is I think that there are a couple of things that we've been hearing about, some as a result of the shutdown, but one, there are significant numbers of people are really unhappy with Congress. They have a 5% approval rating at this point. And I saw a poll that indicated that 50% of people would be in favor of simply chucking them all and starting all over again. I mean, there's a significant amount of unhappiness with the kind of behavior that our representatives and senators are displaying at this point. And again, that's on either side. They're not willing to have a significant compromise the way we used to see back in the 80s, 90s, where you, in order to get anything accomplished, there had to be a compromise. You had to give something up in order to get something else. But we're starting to see in different places experiments in the voting process, not in the compromise afterwards, but in the voting process. In California, they're experimenting with with changes to their districting and their elections where you don't vote in a primary. Everyone votes for anyone. And so you may have five people up for grabs in a particular district, and you vote for the one that most closely represents your interests. So it's not Democrat against Republican, right? It's these three Democrats and these four Republicans and this one independent who are all vying for your vote, which means they don't have the ability to be too far right or too far left. They have an incentive to be as open to any kind of a dialogue as they possibly can. And one of the things that we're seeing in the California legislature as a result is a much greater willingness to compromise, because they recognize that if they do things that are displeasing to the general population in their district, they're going to get voted out by someone who is going to be more favorable by the general district. It's not a Republican who's going to say, I'm going to get voted out by my Republicans. No, because there's not the primary system is disappearing. So they can't, it's not one Republican that arises and one Democrat that arises and they butt heads. It's everyone that gets together in the same pot. And so if I wanted to vote for this person, I vote for this person because of the issues on which they stand, not because they're a Democrat or Republican.
So there's not appealing to the base and the primary and then moving to the center.
There's no longer appealing. And I think that's one of the things that's gotten us in trouble is we have modified district sizes and boundaries to the point where in a number of states, Democrats have very little incentive to compromise. Republicans have very little incentive to compromise in Congress because they're safe at home. And the only danger that they feel is if, for example, a Republican says if a Republican in a very highly Republican district were to be seen as compromising, that person is now going to be attacked by someone on his or her right, not by someone who's more moderate, and that gives that person the incentive to continue to stay as far to the right as possible. And the same argument can be made for someone on the left. If you're in a very democratically safe district, you have no incentive to compromise, because if you compromise, you're seen as you're not liberal enough. And so you will be attacked in a primary by someone further on the left who will more represent the liberal base. And then that person gets elected, and then that person has no incentive to compromise.
Well, this sounds like a great idea, but it's not going to help us come January or February, is it? We're going to go through this again.
We will go through this again. We have had assurances from the leaders in Congress that the shutdown is not going to be used as a weapon. I don't know that, given past events, I don't know that we can take that at face value. But I think it's clear that if nothing gets accomplished by this bipartisan committee before Christmas, then we will probably see the same sort of thing come January, February. It probably won't be it won't be a shutdown, but we will see this happen again over the size of the debt, raising the debt ceiling again.
Thanks to Brian Peterson for contributing to the program. For KNIA, KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In-Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In-Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In-Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.